Chapter 2. Earth. After getting grilled by one group after another for 4 straight days, I wrangled permission to leave the base. Just me, no escort. I wasn't under arrest, and although I still had the big red button app on my Z-phone that could activate the Dutchman's weapons, it wasn't necessary. Unlike last time, there was a skeleton crew aboard the ship. I didn't need to be on duty 24/7 to protect the planet. Besides, we now knew there were no Kristang or Theranin ships on this side of the local wormhole. So I had the night off. All I needed to do was report back for another debriefing at 0800 the next morning, Friday morning. I was hoping they would let me have the weekend off. I was also certainly not betting on it. "Hey, Joe, you think your weekend sucked?" Skippy said to me as I was changing into civilian clothes. "That was nothing compared to what I had to go through." "Oh, yeah, sorry. I meant to ask you about that. How did it go?" UNEF had come up with some astonishingly moronic idea for Skippy to be examined by psychologists and AI experts. UNEF's thinking, if that word even applied, was there was something wrong with Skippy that made him act like such an immature asshole. I had told them no, there is nothing wrong with Skippy. He is simply an incredibly powerful, smart, amoral little beer can. Being an asshole was just his personality. UNEF didn't listen to me. Fortunately, UNEF's search for humans who were considered experts in the field of artificial intelligence ended quickly, since humanity had not yet developed true AI. Asking a human to examine Skippy would be like asking a flatworm to look under the hood of a car and tell you why it won't start. The few people working in the field of AI who were contacted by UNEF naturally would have given anything to speak with Skippy. But they all told UNEF that any knowledge transfer would be one way, and Skippy refused to cooperate. I expected that any psychologist would have told UNEF that they had no way to usefully examine the psyche of an alien artificial intelligence. I underestimated the arrogance of psychologists. Despite having exactly zero frame of reference for what constituted normal behavior for an elder AI, the psychologists plowed ignorantly ahead. "It went better for me than for them," Skippy chuckled. "You know what? The experience was actually mildly entertaining for a while until I got bored with it. One of them had a nervous breakdown. Another one started crying and ended the conversation. He's in therapy now." "Skippy, you didn't have to do that." "Hey, you did warn them. It's not my fault they ignored you. Morons." "Oh, boy." I had warned them. Skippy knew just about everything there was to know about a person, and he was an expert at pushing people's buttons. Whatever a person's weakness or trigger points were, he would find them and use them. What the hell had they been thinking, trying to peel back the mind of such an immensely intelligent being? "Don't do it again, please." "No problem, Joe. That little farce is over. Although they did conclude that whatever is wrong with me is your fault." "What? How the hell did they figure that?" "Well, reading from their preliminary report, they're saying the alien AI is engaging in classic mirroring behavior with its companion, Joe Bishop. It is because of Bishop's immature personality that the Skippy being's behavior is..." "I don't need to read the rest of this BS to you, Joe. The gist of it is that if a different person had discovered me in that dusty warehouse, a person the psychologists consider more mature, then I would be more serious and cooperative." "Oh. Crap. Another reason for UNEF to be pissed at me." "Well, they're, not right about that, are they?" Skippy made a raspberry sound. "Ha! No way, dude. I've told you before, me being an asshole is just me. That's not going to change. Especially not because some bacteria with a degree in psychology says so." "Oh. Good, then." A bus took me into town. All I wanted was a cheeseburger, a beer, and time to myself. There was a crowd of reporters outside the base fence, all hoping to get an interview with anyone who had been on the Theranin Star Carrier. In my civilian clothes, on an ordinary bus, and with a baseball cap pulled down over my eyes, I sailed right through the reporters. Once I got off the bus, I wandered down some side streets. I wanted to find a place that wouldn't be crowded with people from the base. Finally, I found a window that advertised wine flights, whatever that is, and I saw a group of people wearing suits go in. In my experience, this type of place was not likely to be crowded with off-duty soldiers. It was about half full already. I found a spot at the bar, ordered a cold beer and a cheeseburger, and half-watched a college basketball game on the TV. The cheeseburger was merely okay. It may have been my mood that was the problem. While I was taking a sip of beer, someone jostled me from behind, and I almost spilled my drink. Sorry, said a woman as she plunked her purse on the bar. This place is crowded tonight. She caught the bartender's attention. Lemon drop martini, please. Oh, hi. Hey, I've seen you on the base, I said truthfully. She had been in the cafeteria several times, and I'd seen her in hallways, too. She was a civilian. I guess she worked at Wright-Patterson. Her ID card was partly sticking out of her purse. You're Joe, right? She asked. You're one of the X-4 Starship crew? She added that last question quietly. When she first sat down next to me, I had half turned away, assuming she was there with friends and didn't want to be hit on by guys that night. Now I was paying attention. She'd sat down next to me because it was one of only two seats left at the bar, it being happy hour on a Thursday night. Short, thick, black hair, in a cut that I think is called a bob, but I am certainly no expert on women's hairstyles. Her hair was longer in front than the back. It framed her face nicely. Brown eyes. She had a tan from someplace she'd been on vacation, but not recently. It was starting to fade. Late 20s, maybe? I'm a bad judge of age. Cute. Very cute. And a nice smile. She tucked a badge in her purse and slung it over her knee, the way women do when bars aren't smart enough to install purse hooks under the bar top. Offering a hand, she added, I'm Rachel. I work in IT support at the Base Network Center. Sergeant Joe Bishop. I shook her hand for what I hoped was the right amount of time, not too firm, but not trying to crush her either. A handshake that hopefully said, I am not a creep, and please, please, please stay here and talk with me. Also, hopefully it did not convey the desperation I was feeling either. That was asking a lot from a handshake. Hello, Sergeant Joe, she said, as she glanced around. I fervently wished she wasn't looking for her friends, or worse, her boyfriend. She wasn't wearing a wedding ring. What brought you here? This place is out of the way. After wearing a uniform every day aboard the ship, I want to be a civilian for a while. I pointed to the civilian shirt I was wearing. I know what you mean, she laughed. And it was a truly wonderful sound. I was in the Air Force. Wearing a uniform makes it easy for women. You don't have to put together an outfit every day. Hey, guys just do a sniff test on whatever clothes are on top of the pile of laundry on the floor, I admitted. You guys are so lucky, she said, and lightly punched me on the shoulder. Things were looking good. Now I have to find something business casual to wear 5 days a week. If we have a high-level meeting, then I have to dress up. She took a sip of a lemon-drop martini. You were on that alien starship? On behalf of all the men and women trapped on Paradise, I could at least entertain Rachel with UNEF's current cover story. A cover story that had been pounded into my head over and over. Telling her the story also gave me reason to lean closer to her, to be heard over the noisy bar. Yes, I said, sticking to the cover story. I was on the starship. I went to space, and I had been on Paradise. It was a nice planet, nothing special. The parts of Paradise that I had seen were kind of like Kansas and the Amazon. Not that I'd ever been to either of those places on Earth. We humans didn't fly the starship that was now in orbit. We were just passengers on a Theranan ship. The Theranan were little green men. I had seen them, but never spoken with one. That part was the truth. No, I didn't know when the X-4 would be coming back from Paradise. I had not been on Paradise in a long time. That was the truth again. And no, I hadn't had contact with Paradise, and I didn't know where the Theranan starship would be taking us next. I didn't even know when or if I would be going into space next. Actually, there was a lot of truth mixed into UNEF's cover story. Most of what I needed to say was that I didn't know things that I honestly didn't know. That made it easy to remember. You are only passengers aboard the Theranan ship? She asked quizzically. Why did you bring pilots? I saw people wearing Air Force flight suits get off the dropship when you landed. Oh, yeah. UNEF had a cover story for that also. When we were on Paradise, we flew captured Ruhar aircraft. The Kristang trained us on a planet we called Camp Alpha before we went to Paradise, I added nervously. To my relief, she nodded and seemed to buy the story. Don't worry. I won't ask where you went this last time. After enforced sobriety on Camp Alpha, Paradise, and aboard the Flying Dutchman, I was being careful to limit myself to beer. While I talked with Rachel, I nursed the same beer I had started with. Raising the glass to drain the last of the beer, I was jostled from behind again and spilled it on the bar. Some of it splashed on my shirt. Rachel handed me a napkin and tried to catch the bartender's attention. "It's okay," I told her. "I have to watch what I'm drinking. It's been a long time since I've had much alcohol." Rachel had been about to order another lemon drop. She dropped her hand and looked around.
"This place is crowded. It's karaoke night."
She pointed to the stage.
"Oh, no,"
a loud but muffled voice came from the Z-phone in my pocket. "No karaoke for you, Joe. Your singing voice scares animals and small children."
"Excuse me," I said to Rachel and pulled out my Z-phone.
"Skippy," I whispered as quietly as I could to still be heard over the noisy bar. "This is not a good time." Rachel's eyes widened, and she leaned closer to me.
"Is that Skippy?"
Now it was my turn to be surprised. UNEF Command had told us that rumors of a Skippy had gotten out, as was inevitable. But that annoying beer can didn't know when to be quiet. "Skippy the Magnificent at your service, Rachel, my dear." "Not now, Skippy. I'm serious," I said, and sat on the phone. Look, Rachel,
I've heard of someone called Skip."
As she spoke, the karaoke started, with some drunk guy loudly warbling a pop song off-key.
"Joe," she said, with her lips practically brushing my ear because the place was so loud. "Let's go someplace else."
"That would be great," I said without hesitation. The someplace else was a coffee shop down the street. We got coffees. Technically, what she got looked like an ice cream sundae with a tiny splash of coffee somewhere in it. Lots of whipped cream and caramel sauce, and a straw. That did not qualify as coffee, in my opinion. I paid for the coffees, although she used her frequent coffee buyer card, so I guessed that she got coffee there often. The shop wasn't empty as I had hoped. That disappointed me, because I'd been hoping for it to be quieter. It was a hipster douchebag with a carefully tended scruffy beard, a bowler hat, and an ironic t-shirt playing acoustic guitar in the corner. He had brought a group of enthusiastic friends, but apparently left the talent behind in his car. It actually turned out great, to my delight. Rachel and I had to sit close to hear each other. The background noise meant I didn't need to worry about being overheard, and the terrible singing of the hipster gave us something to laugh about. First, I told her the official UNEF cover story that I had been given in case anyone asked about Skippy. Skippy is the nickname humans used for the AI that ran the Theranin ship. He is super intelligent and rightfully disdainful of lowly humans, and he tends to involve himself in our lives even when we're not on the ship. Rachel could tell that further inquiry about Skippy, the Theranin ship, or Paradise were not welcome. Being ex-military and having a clearance to work on Air Force computers, she knew that certain subjects were on a need-to-know basis, so she was cool about changing the subject.
"Joe Bishop. Is there any chance you are that Joe Bishop? The Barney guy?"
"Yes," I admitted sheepishly. I'd seen her checking her phone on the walk from the bar. She probably had Googled me. Talking about events in the public record was safe. Anything that happened before I took the space elevator up from Ecuador. I told her what I hoped was a humorous account of how I became known as Barney. Rachel laughed at my story. Then I asked about her. This wasn't me doing the guy thing of letting a woman talk so I could get into her pants. I was genuinely interested in her, and not only because she is a woman. After being captain of a private ship, commander of everyone I saw on a daily basis, I was desperate to simply talk with someone like the normal people talk. Rachel was a good listener, and as she told me about her life, I sat and enjoyed being a regular person. Sitting in a coffee shop in a typical American city with a person who I could not potentially order into deadly combat was cathartic. We stayed late enough at the coffee shop that we finished our coffees, and I got us decafs and we split a scone. The hipster guy ran out of folk songs to mangle and finished his set about a quarter after 10, 15 minutes before the coffee shop closed for the night. We took a hint and walked outside. "Can I walk you to your car?" I asked awkwardly. Clearly, I was out of practice.
"No need," she said, and even in the night she must have seen my face fall. "I live across the street."
She pointed to an apartment building. "Oh," I said with relief. "Well, that explains the frequent coffee drinker card."
"Yes," she laughed. "I spend too much money in there." There was an awkward moment of silence that most guys would typically use as an opportunity for some lame hint about going to her place. "Rachel, this has been great. Thank you," I blurted out before my testicles could stop me. "No," they were shouting, "no!" "I have another meeting at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, so I'm going to head back to the base. I'll see you around on Monday." The truth was, I really did have a great time talking with her, and I didn't want to spoil the pleasant buzz by her having to let me down, so I did it for her. She seemed surprised, but also mildly relieved to avoid the inevitable awkwardness. Paradise. Materna Logelia frowned as the human commander left her office. She did not like lying to, or at the very least misleading, the poor humans. Although the humans had come to Gitanu as lackeys of the hated Kristang, Materna felt sorry for them, and even some measure of affection for some of them. In a way, although the planet had been under the control of the occupying Kristang back then, she felt a pang of nostalgia for the time when the humans had called her the Burgermeister. The current human commander was from an ethnic subgroup the humans called Chinese. All humans looked pretty much the same to her. She didn't appreciate the significance of genetic, cultural, or political differences. Also, she simply didn't care. She had other more pressing issues to absorb her attention. For some reason, that seemed to be important to the humans. Command of their United Nations Expeditionary Force rotated regularly among the five nations who constituted the combat force, or what had been a combat force before the Ruha re-established control over the planet. Whatever it had once been, the human force was now mostly scattered across the southern continent, from which the few Ruha residents had been evacuated. The humans could have the southern continent they called Lemuria, and hopefully within a few years the humans would be self-sufficient there. That time could not come soon enough for Baterna, because the humans were both a constant distraction and a substantial drain on scarce resources. It was why those resources were so scarce that was the reason she misled the human commander, and misled the Ruha residents of Gitanu. The Ruha government, Baterna knew, did not want to keep Gitanu, had not intended or wanted to recapture the planet at all. Gitanu had only been the bait to lure a major Kristang Therenan task force into battle so it could be trapped and destroyed. That Ruha Jarapatha force was not supposed to actually retake control of Gitanu, but as the battle developed and spread rapidly across the sector, the situation became highly fluid. The success of the initial attack wildly exceeded the expectations of Ruha Jarapatha command, opening additional opportunities. When intelligence was received that two Kristang battle groups intended to use Gitanu as a place to make a last stand, possibly ransacking the planet in the process, the local Ruha commander had reacted quickly and diverted his ships to jump into orbit. Now the Ruha were stuck with a planet they didn't want. The planet held two troublesome populations, humans and native Ruha, who outlasted the Kristang evacuation effort. Those native Ruha now expected their government to assist in rebuilding the planet and bringing the evacuees back. "Be patient," Baterna had to tell the natives. "Those who were evacuated will be returned in due time," she lied. "The military situation in the sector is still unsettled," she told them truthfully. "A ceasefire has been negotiated, but there have been incidents. It is still too dangerous for civilian transport ships to make the journey to Gitanu," she said. And that was also the truth. What the government instructed her to lie about was the intended endgame, giving Gitanu back to the Kristang. Before the recent wormhole shift, the planet that the Ruha knew as Gitanu, the Kristang claimed as Perdassus, and the humans called Paradise, had been roughly equally conveniently located for both the Ruha and the Kristang. After the shift, the closest wormhole was substantially further away from the Ruha than it was for the Kristang. If they had not already occupied the planet, the Ruha would never have bothered going there. The Ruha government did not want Gitanu now. The wormhole shift had opened much more alluring and less expensive opportunities. Gitanu was too sparsely populated and too vulnerable to bother keeping. In order to assure the planet's safety, the Ruha would need to permanently station a major battle group in the system, and Gitanu was simply not worth that effort and expense. So, the Ruha were secretly negotiating with a coalition of major Kristang clans to give Gitanu back to the Kristang in exchange for Kristang concessions of more valuable territory elsewhere. That would be bad for the native Ruhar, who would be forcibly evacuated by their own government. It would be absolutely disastrous for the humans. There was nowhere to evacuate humans to, and the Ruhar certainly would not be taking their former oppressors with them. Humans on Gitanu would be left under control of the cruel Kristang, who now considered their former clients as traitors. So when the human commander of their UNEF came into her office to discuss his many legitimate concerns, Paterna had to nod and smile and assure him that they could work together. And they would. Right up until the point when the Ruhar betrayed their slowly developing trust. Earth. I slept great and woke up the next morning in a good mood. The worst of the debriefing had to be over, I figured. The session that day wasn't bad. The people running the debriefing seemed to have run out of questions for the moment, and I had run out of things to say. I had accepted that UNEF and the U.S. military were disappointed and angry with me, and my acceptance took away some of the fun for them to berate me yet again. By 15:30, we ended the session for the day, and the next meeting wasn't scheduled until Monday. I had a whole weekend free. So, I was completely surprised when Rachel called me that afternoon.
"Hi, Joe, this is Rachel," she said.
"Oh, hi. How'd you get my number?" I looked at my Z-phone. As far as I knew, a Z-phone did not have a phone number. When we got our original Z-phones on Camp Alpha, they were keyed to us. To contact someone, you looked them up in the UNEF directory by name or unit.
"You texted me last night," she answered cautiously. "I was wondering how you got my number."
"I did?" "Joe, you dum-dum," Skippy broke into the call, and I assume Rachel couldn't hear him on her end. "I texted her with, 'Thank you for a very nice evening. Clearly, you have no idea what you are doing with women. Damn, you are a dumbass sometimes.'" I gestured at my Z-phone with my middle finger, knowing Skippy would be watching through the camera. "Oh, yeah, I did, Rachel. Sorry, it's been a very long week. I got your number from the base operator." I winced at that lie, hoping she wouldn't think that was creepy of me. "Well, I'm not, you know, stalking you or anything." OMG, what an idiot I am. If she didn't think I was creepy before, then mentioning stalking should have set off her alarms. But she laughed. "Someone up there liked me, and I didn't mean a shiny beer can."
"That is good to know, Joe. Listen, if you're not busy tonight, would you be interested in dinner?"
"That depends." I tried to be smooth while inside I was shaken. "I'm not familiar with fabulous Dayton, Ohio. Do you know a place that has people who can actually sing?" She laughed again.
"Dayton has a bigger supply of ironic hipsters than you might expect, but we can try to avoid them."
"Wow, Joe," Skippy said after Rachel ended the call. "Did you just have a real girl ask you on a date?
I thought there were no more surprises in the universe." "A real woman, Skippy, and it's not such a surpri—" I stopped, a bad thought running with a chill down my spine. "Hey, Skippy, this Rachel, she said she works in IT, is that right? She's not an undercover intel type, is she? She did ask a lot of questions last night." I was afraid that our meeting the previous night may not have been the coincidence that it seemed. UNEF sending an attractive woman to see if I blew our cover story was exactly what I expected them to do. "Nope. She is genuinely who she says she is. She did talk and text with friends today, telling them that she met a cute guy from X4 and that you are that Barney guy. I know you hate being referred to as Bar—" "Cute?" I interrupted. "She said I'm cute?" Those were her exact words. "Oh, damn," I said with disappointment. "What is wrong with that?" Skippy asked with surprise in his voice. "She said that I'm cute. Puppies are cute, Skippy. I was hoping she said that I'm hot." "Oh, boy," Skippy sighed heavily. "Every time I think I have plumbed the lowest depths of your stupidity, Joe, I find a bottomless well beneath it. At some point in your life, you have had social contact with human women, right? Yet you apparently know absolutely nothing about the fairer sex." "Huh? How do you figure that?" Most of the time when the beer can insulted me, I didn't much care, but this time it bugged me. "Joe, cute means she likes you, and that she feels comfortable around you. She also said you are funny. For a girl to go to bed with a guy, she needs to get past her inhibitions, let her guard down. If you are cute and you make her comfortable, and especially if you can make her laugh, then, dude, you are totally in. Trust me.
Wow. Great. I never thought of it like...
Unless she laughs when you take your pants off.
Yeah, I figured that.
She said that I'm cute and funny. So, I'm not telling you anything else, she said, Skippy protested.
Oh, yeah, sure, because you're all about privacy, I said sarcastically.
No, it's because I like her, and I don't want you to do some typically stupid Joe thing and screw this up. You're likely to slip up and mention something I told you. I have been on dates with girls before, you know.
Shauna seducing you in the back of a truck was not a date, Joe.
Shauna, I felt a pang of sadness thinking about her stuck on paradise. It's not the first girl I have been with.
Oh, yeah, because you were such a stud in high school.
Well, you did go out with Melanie Rogers for almost 5 months during your senior year.
Hey, why did you two break up? Skippy asked.
We were young, and it's complicated.
Ooh, I think I know what the problem is. Can I guess?
He sounded like an overeager first-grade boy, desperate to get the teacher's attention.
What? I foolishly took the bait.
Was it her inability to deal with crushing disappointment every single day?
You are such an asshole. I couldn't help laughing. Why do I keep you around?
Most likely it is because of your shockingly poor judgment.
Yeah, that must be it.
Getting ready for my date with Rachel, I took a shower and shaved. Then I contemplated what else to do. It had been a while since I'd been on a normal civilian date with a woman.
Skippy offered to help.
Are you going to put on some of that body spray you bought at the base store?
I hesitated. I don't know, Skippy. It never seemed to work for me like it does for guys in the TV commercials.
Well, that's because you weren't using enough of it, Dum-Dum. You need to spray on at least twice as much to turn girls on.
Oh. Thanks, Skippy, I said as I reached for the can.
No! Skippy shouted. Damn, you are a dumbass. Seriously.
Oh, this is hopeless.
Hopeless. Girls hate it when a clueless guy uses too much cologne, and you guys always use too much or not at all. Put that can down. Get dressed. Wear the blue shirt.
The blue one? Why?
Because it picks up the blue in your eyes. Also because I went back through her Facebook posts and emails and IMs and credit card receipts, and I learned that Rachel purchased blue shirts for two of her previous boyfriends. Her favorite color is blue.
Hmm. That could be a problem, Skippy. Are you sure my shirt isn't going to remind her of an ex-boyfriend?
No, it's a different shade of blue. Trust me on this, Joe.
Dinner with Rachel was wonderful. I forget what I ate. Rachel had a salad like women do on first dates. She offered to pay for dinner since she had invited me out. I paid, explaining that I had a lot of back pay coming, there not being anything aboard a Theranan starship to spend money on anyway. After dinner, we went across the street to a bar with good music, and we had a terrific time. Rachel has a wicked sense of humor, especially after her second or maybe third lemon drop martini.
Fourth?
I lost track. I stuck to beer and tried to drink slowly. Damn, all I wanted was not to screw this up. I was on a real date, with a real woman, doing things like regular people did. That was all I wanted. We ended the night at her place. I don't remember how it happened. I do remember that I didn't try using any lame pickup line on her. Going to her place just seemed natural. Figuring that we both had a lot to drink, I took it slow, but apparently I was out of practice. She ruffled my hair with one hand.
Joe, stop. It's okay. I drank too many lemon drops. It's not going to happen for me tonight.
Hey, Joe! Skippy's distorted voice blared out of my Z-phone earpiece under the bed somewhere. You should do that thing you did with Shauna. That worked.
Oh, I frantically fumbled around under the bed with one hand trying to find the stupid earpiece and kill it.
Who?
I could feel Rachel stiffen.
Is Shauna?
Her voice was icy as the interstellar depths.
The damned earpiece had rolled all the way under the far side of the bed.
Nobody. I mean, my brain screamed at me that telling a woman I was with that a woman I had been with was nobody to me would not help my case.
Not nobody. Nobody recent.
Joe sweated up the sheets with Shauna on Camp Alpha, Skippy said cheerily.
Not sheets, exactly. More like army-issue blankets in the back of a truck.
Skippy, please,
For the love of God, shut the hell up!
Rachel slammed her legs together and smacked me in the chin with a knee. She knocked me off the bed onto the floor.
The back of a truck?
That was her idea, not mine. She wanted to... I stopped talking, because even I knew a woman doesn't want details of a man's prior sex partners. Sometimes my brain is way smarter than I am.
I'm going to stop talking now.
Wise choice, Rachel said, and pulled up the bed covers, shutting me out.
Hey, it wasn't my idea to... This doesn't sound like you not talking, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Right. Feeling like an idiot kneeling naked on the floor, I ducked down to reach under the bed, but I couldn't see the earpiece.
How does this Skippy AI know what you did with her? You made a sex video?
No, I said from under the bed. I saw the stupid thing now. It was almost out of reach. My Z-phone was under a blanket back then. That's the thing about Skippy. He can see and hear almost everything. Rachel pulled the covers up higher.
Like, now he sees us from the ship?
Skippy said something that I couldn't hear because I now had the earpiece and was squeezing the speaker in my fist.
Yeah, he can see us. His technology is super advanced. Something about him being able to detect the way dust particles in the air vibrate, I think. He won't explain it to us humans.
Uh-huh. Close enough. Skippy's voice now came out of the speaker in the clock radio. I am Skippy the Omniscient. I see all, I hear all, I know all. Rachel's face was sheer white.
Everything?
Pretty much, yeah, Skippy responded. Not that I pay attention much. You humans are generally not that interesting a species, and monkey mating kind of grosses me out. The last thing I want to watch is Joe's pasty white ass bouncing up and down. Yuck! The speaker began playing the soundtrack to a really bad porn movie with a heavy bass line and lots of moaning and sighing. Bow chicka bow boom boom bow bow chicka bow. Not that I watch bad porn movies, of course, but you know, I heard about them.
Skippy, cut it out, I shouted.
The music stopped.
I'm only trying to help, Joe. Clearly what you were doing wasn't getting the job done. I'd suggest you look in her goodie drawer for assistance, but the batteries in her favorite toy are almost dead.
Then he added in a low voice, Man, she gives that poor thing a workout.
You want me to...
Rachel's hand flew to her mouth. I thought she was going to pass out.
Go away. I want you to go away, I shouted.
Okay, fine. Remember that the next time you need my help.
Rachel, look. I'm sorry. If I'd known your AI friend was making this a threesome, I would have said no. He watches everything you do?
He watches everything everyone does. It's not just me.
How do you live like that? She asked in horror.
I shrugged. It's like if you're having sex and the dog is laying down in the corner of the room. It doesn't matter if it's watching you because it's just a dog. With Skippy, you get used to it because he truly doesn't care. He's just not that interested. If he's watching us here, he's watching a lot of other people at the same time. And that's only a tiny part of what's going on in his mind at the time. She pulled the covers all the way up over her head. Only her fingernails were showing. I took that as my cue to leave. If I could find my pants. Where the hell were my pants? With a glance into the hallway, I determined they weren't there either.
I'm sorry, Rachel. I'll get out of your hair. You have any idea where my pants are?
She peeked out from under the covers.
Your pants? No, I don't. Your friend Skippy is gone?
I was too tired to care. Think so, yeah. Look, my pants must be under the cup. She flung the covers aside and looked at me with one eye open.
I'm probably going to regret this, but can we sleep on this and talk in the morning? I'm too tired and I drank too much to think straight right now.
That sounded good. Being in bed with her, simply being in bed. I was tired, and all I wanted to do was sleep. I slept like a log. She said she slept well also. In the morning, after I made coffee, we took a shower together and we hit the reset button. It was great. Sex is so much better when you're not drunk, and when you're awake. Later that morning, I walked down the street to a bakery to get breakfast. Strolling back with a bag of baked goodies, I was feeling on top of the world.
The weather was beautiful, sunny with a few clouds here and there. It was a cool morning, but the afternoon promised to be pleasantly warm. There was a half-dressed woman waiting for me in her apartment, and since she had the day off, we had the whole day to ourselves. Friends of hers were having a cookout that evening, and we were invited. It felt great having no responsibilities. Let someone else save the world for a change. I was on leave. And, of course, the main reason for my super-ultra-great mood is that I got laid. Never underestimate that. Skippy called me. I held the Z-phone to my ear as if it were a regular cell phone. I didn't want to draw attention to myself.
"Good morning, Joe," Skippy said with a cheery voice. "Were you and Rachel all right last night?"
"You weren't watching us, were you?"
"Not as far as you know."
"Okay, good." I stopped to let a car pull into a driveway. "I really think that's a situation where you shouldn't..." "Hey, wait a minute. Not as far as I know."
"Gosh, will you look at the time? I should be go..."
"Not so fast, Skippy. You have some splain..." "Oh, what the hell? Why would it matter?" I'd gotten so used to his watching everything I did that I didn't care. "Hey, Skippy. You're the smartest being in the galaxy, right?"
"Yep, as far as both of us know."
"Great. Because I do not understand women. Human women. Can you give me some insight? Help a brother out?" Skippy sighed, or imitated a sigh. It was convincing.
"Joe, I have studied all the literature about human-female psychology, read all the books written by and for women, downloaded every blog, every Instagram or Pinterest post, watched every program on the Lifetime Channel, listened in on conversations between women, and have chatted online with billions of your females. With all of my processing power over the equivalent of millions of years of analysis, I have come to one simple conclusion about human females."
"And what's that?" I asked eagerly.
"Bitches be crazy."
"Skippy," I managed to say after I stopped laughing. "That's not nice."
"Oh, was that inappropriate? I can never tell."
"Decidedly inappropriate. Also wickedly funny, but don't do it again, huh?"
"No problem."
"Seriously, Joe, women have just as much trouble understanding men as men have trouble understanding women. The difference is, women generally want to understand men in order to be better relationship partners. Men mostly are looking to get women into bed."
"Well, get them into bed first." I felt the need to defend my gender.
"Uh-huh. Anyway, trying to understand women is a futile exercise. You may as well say you are trying to understand people, all people. My suggestion is you find one woman and do your best to understand her. I hear that is quite rewarding."
"Someday, yeah. For now, me going off into deep space on an alien pirate ship makes it difficult to get a relationship started, you know."
"Do you regret traveling around the galaxy with me?"
He sounded a little bit hurt.
"No, not at all, Skippy. Hey, come on. We saved the world together. Twice."
That remark got a strange look from a woman walking a dog past me. I lowered my voice.
"I wouldn't trade that experience for anything. And as much of a gargantuan asshole you are most of the time, I got to meet you. That's an incredible honor for a monkey like me."
"Same here. Well, probably more of an honor for you to meet me, to be honest. It's not even close to tell the truth."
"Asshole," I said under my breath.
"I'm enjoying being on leave. It's great not to think about aliens destroying Earth for a few days. You need a break. You deserve it. Okay, Joe, I'll leave you alone for a while, unless you contact me. Hey, heads up, Joe. Rachel is on her phone talking with one of her friends about you."
"Oh, crap. Am I in trouble?"
"Quite the contrary, Joe. She is saying only good things about you."
"Damn. Girls tell each other everything."
"Everything."
I did not like the sound of that.
"You men would be shocked. Again, she is saying good things about you. This is not my area of expertise, but you may get lucky again today."